This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders. On today's show, we have Cornerstone Advisors' very own Ron Shevlin talking about the organization's What's Going On in Banking 2022 report, and it's subtitled Rebounding from the Revenue Recession. Really, really good stuff here from Ron, as usual, so enjoy. Austin here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Mr. Ron Shevlin from Cornerstone Advisors. Ron, how are you, sir?
Doing great, Mike. Thanks for having me back.
You are very welcome. I'm kind of catching you in between snow blowing and clearing out all the snow that you guys got the last weekend, but glad to see you survived your winter wonderland. So, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. All good. You know, I tweeted a couple months ago when I bought new snowshoes that there was going to be no snow in Boston this year, thinking that my purchase would have guaranteed no snow. So this is all win-win for me. I get to use my new snowshoes.
Put them to good use. Well done, sir. Well done. All right. Speaking of putting things to good use, put some fantastic data to good use in Cornerstone's latest What's Going On in Banking 2022 report. Good stuff in here, Ron. I was perusing it last night. And yeah, just a really great points in here. But I want to kind of start from the very beginning, kind of set the stage here. The title, you guys kind of entitled it Rebounding from the Revenue Recession. So can you kind of, what's the meaning behind rebounding from the revenue recession? What's going on here?
Yeah, the idea, and by the way, I stole that term from my colleague, Steve Williams, partner and president of Cornerstone, because he had published something a couple months ago using that term revenue recession, and it just really stuck with me.
Yeah.
The idea being that, well, with the economy coming back to the extent that it's coming back, that a lot of financial institutions and credit unions in particular were still facing challenges from a revenue perspective. And this was in a couple of different areas. First of all, you know, look, the long-term trends, and it's really accelerating from an overdraft perspective, is really hitting home. You know, I had published something about 8-9 months ago saying that we're going to see an overhaul of overdraft. And it was a little bit early at the time, but Ally Financial had announced some changes and somebody else had. And we'll apologize here because my Zoom seems to like cut my video off all the time.
So
I'll keep a watch on that. I don't know what it's doing. I think it has something to do with its looks, you know, monitor. Like it says, you're just not worthy of being on camera, Ron. So it cuts me off.
Well, in that case, I'm going to be cut off too, Ron. So
And I just worry if it cuts my audio off, because then it's like I got to really have to go back to writing if they're going to cut me off on both video and audio.
We hear you loud and clear.
Sorry for that, but I'll keep monitoring that, make sure I'm still on camera. So got the challenge with the revenue perspective. One is certainly overdraft. And listen, we've now seen everybody blink. Wells Fargo, Bank of America. I'm not sure Chase has actually announced anything, but you know, my concern 8-9 months ago was that if the big banks overhauled their overdraft policies, it could really leave the credit unions in a bit of a hole from a public relations perspective.
Yeah.
But they're stepping up to it. And I think the reality is that for a good number of credit unions, simply have to come to grips with the reality that overdraft income is not going to be where it's been in the past, and there's going to be some dealing with that.
Yeah, well, Second, did a big study on that, actually. I just had them on. They did a whole study about the overdraft programs and stuff like that. So sorry to interrupt.
No problem. And they do great work. So I'm sure they've done a great job of quantifying that. And so second, having had to do a bit with mortgage revenue. Listen, first of all, this has been a longer term trend that non-banks have gotten into the mortgage space and really captured a lot of market share. But I think the issue was, look, if we're in our environment of rising interest rates, that might impact demand for mortgages, and that might lead to some more revenue downfall. But then the third piece, I think, was a longer term trend as well, and it's sort of the payments challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first of all, you know, relying on interchange is always kind of risky and iffy. And, you know, what's really happening in the market from a longer term fintech perspective are a lot of players coming in and looking to displace interchange in particular. But there's a number of behaviors from a consumer perspective that is helping to dampen interchange for financial institutions, both banks and credit unions. The whole buy now, pay later trend, while not huge, is, you know, nicking a little bit of payment revenue off the charts there. Trends like Venmo offering business to consumer, consumer to business payments, you know, retail payments, things like that getting in. And things like the merchants basically getting, you know, following the Starbucks playbook and offering mobile apps that allow you to load some funds up and then pay it down. And more consumers are doing that, adopting it. And again, it's you know, not huge chunks, but it's little nicks here and there that are kind of cutting into that. So, you know, the idea is that, you know, credit unions, especially with their heavy retail focus on consumers, you know, need to really step up to the plate, look, understand that there's this downward trend from a non-interest income perspective and potentially even the from an interest perspective, you know, from a loan perspective that's impacting their organizations. And, you know, listen, I personally have never been a big fan of cutting expenses to match your declining revenue. It's never a good long-term strategy. So I think the idea was to kind of lay out this idea of new recession and talk a little bit about, you know, how credit unions are going to have to, you know, come back to it. And I think, you know, at the end of 2022, I think was projecting that we'd look back at this and say, okay, yeah, credit unions stepped up to the plate, recognized this revenue downside, revenue downfall, and took a bunch of actions to, quote, rebound from the revenue recession.
Right, right. Yeah, and the rebound, because I see a lot of these going on right now. And it's, you know, if 2022 is the year of the rebound, what's going to create the rebound? Because there's so many things, like you just said, Ron, that are working kind of almost against us. I mean, there's always the, you know, the talent, the labor issues that are going on right now, rates still in their area. Fintechs want to be kind of like banks. So there's so many other things going on out there. So what's going to create this rebound for credit unions?
I think there's a lot of different things that'll contribute to this, Mike, but I think it's really a focus on new product development, new service development, and deployment. You know, the introduction of just new products and services, new sources of revenue. I think one in particular that will be very hot this year is offering cryptocurrency services. Interestingly, in the report, I got to say, when we surveyed about 300 executives, the percentage who said that they would be offering or launching crypto investing services or purchasing services this year was kind of quite small. But my bet is that I think as the ball starts to get rolling, there's going to be a lot of FOMO in the market. And I think as we start to see it, back just today, I saw a note on LinkedIn from Tom Novak at Visions Federal Credit Union in upstate New York. They launched their crypto services. Tom, you owe me for that little plug. And I think we're going to start to see that ball roll a little bit faster and a lot more credit unions looking around and saying, yeah, if everyone else is getting into this, we really need to get into it. Now, what's interesting is we're at a period at the moment where Bitcoin prices in particular have been dropping precipitously. I think I said that correctly.
You did.
And so, you know, that might dampen demand for it. But on the other hand, it might get a lot of people to say, hey, this is a good time to get into the market. Longer term, I think there's a lot of play here in the cryptocurrency area. And I would not write this off. And so I think, you know, offering these kind of services are the kind of things that a lot of credit unions will look at as a fee generating idea. Listen, it's not new. It's been around for a number of years, but bundling non-financial services in with the checking account, things like cell phone damage protection, travel insurance, you know, things like Strategy Core offers to a lot of credit unions. I think a lot more have to start taking a look at that kind of service in order to generate revenue. And adding things into the mobile banking app, like subscription management services, other types of things. And I think, you know, none of them, Mike, are going to replace the overdraft loss or even the interchange loss altogether. But this is why it's so important for credit unions to kind of really get their retail strategy and their revenue strategy in place, because there's not going to be this, oh, yeah, let's just offer this product and we'll replace those tens of billions of dollars in lost overdraft. The other piece of it, I think, is really a refocusing on the payment side of the coin. I think a lot of people like to use the term payment modernization and maybe use that interchangeably with faster payments. But there's a lot of opportunity here in terms of improving the delivery of payment-related services like instant payments on things or other P2P or various types of payments that a lot of credit unions are not set up to do today because they don't have the infrastructure to do it. And I think that that'll be a renewed focus in the next couple of years. In fact, a pretty high percentage of the credit unions that we surveyed for the report said that either this year or next year they would be launching faster payments. And I think that that's just an umbrella term for a broad range of services that are designed not just to keep up with what's going on in the market, mm-hmm. but to become more revenue generated generators.
Completely. And I wanted to do kind of a lightning round because of you guys covered so much. I mean, we can only talk about so much that's in, because this was over 40 pages of information and charts and a lot of numbers and stuff. So I want to do.
I get paid by the page. So the more I can throw in there, the better, Mike.
Well done, Ron. You did good this time around. Hey, let's talk about just real quickly mergers and acquisitions. Increase or decrease? What's going on here? Because we talked about crypto. So let's talk about mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, definitely will increase from fairly high levels already. Look, a couple of things that are driving this. One is we're coming off the pandemic where I think demand and execution of mergers and acquisitions were artificially dampened over the past at least, year and a half, 2 years or so. There's my video again. Let me go back.
You're back, though. You're back.
There we go. I'm back. And so that's one aspect of it. The other is a general trend and belief about the need for scale in the industry, Mike. It's interesting. I actually saw a survey that was actually executed by Bank Director. So it was really more bank focused than credit union focused. So mm-hmm. please don't get on my case for citing this. But they found that a fairly good percentage of respondents in the bank area believe that you've got to really be at a minimum of $1 billion in assets. And a pretty good chunk of respondents said that that minimum level was closer to $10
billion. Oh, my God.
So whatever the right number is, I think there's a pretty good consensus in the market that you've got to be of a certain size. And if you're at $250 to $500 million, you may be feeling that pressure and need to merge. Mm-hmm. That said, Mike, I got to tell you that I think a lot of bank and credit union executives are a bit short-sighted in this. First of all, I don't dispute that you need to hit a certain scale, a certain size to be of a certain scale in the market these days. But I do think that there are alternatives to merging and acquiring to achieve that scale. I think partnerships, especially getting into things like banking as a service, as a partnership trend and a new product generation, product launch perspective is a way to play bigger and partner with this emerging set of banking as a service infrastructure players like Synctera and Treasury Prime. I think, and I'm not getting paid by either of them to say that, by the way. So sorry, I know you probably look for advertising from them. So you can bleep this out if you want. I'm all good with that.
You're good.
But look, this is what's available to a lot of financial institutions today. To play bigger than you are. And I think that's the real challenge.
Yeah, no doubt. Next one I wanted to talk about was lending opportunities. We touched on this a little bit in the beginning, but lending priorities. What should the priorities be this time around? Because we talk about mortgage, there's obviously mortgage and then auto, what's going on with auto, that type of stuff. So what are some lending priorities for credit unions?
So listen, clearly things like mortgages, home equity loans, personal loans, car loans are always going to be at the top of the list in a survey of credit unions. Mm-hmm. The challenge in answering that, Mike, is I think it's so dependent on any particular credit union's strategies. And I think the real challenge for a lot of credit unions, look, if you're doing a great job in indirect auto loans today, you're not going to throw that away. If you're focused on the mortgage market and doing well, you're not going to throw that away. I think the challenge for a lot of credit unions is to look more deeply into their member base and discover the unmet lending needs. You're always going to compete in the auto and home areas, but what are those non-huge areas that can add some interest income that is unique to your member set? And I'll give you examples of this. Los Angeles Federal Credit Union, mm-hmm. Really understands the law enforcement market and knows that they have needs to get loans, short-term loans, to purchase equipment and things like that for their jobs. So, finding those kind of personal loan areas in your member base, I think, is going to be the bigger challenge from a priority perspective for a lot of credit unions.
It's like, so would you categorize in there like solar, even RV loans, things like that? Some things that are kind of a little bit off the beaten path, but could prove nice revenue generators, right?
Yeah. So actually, you're bringing up a good point. So there's two kind of aspects to this. One, as I mentioned, was kind of looking into your member base to see what those unmet needs or opportunities are. But then more broadly, is looking at the broader market to say, are there underserved areas that we as the credit union can go address, especially if there's some base of capability and competency in issuing those loans today. So, it kind of comes back to, really taking a deep look at from a strategic perspective and not just, executing better on existing stuff, but really taking a, broader look at the market to understand, where are these opportunities to generate more revenue.
And that's where all the data analytics comes in. That's what we're all talking about today, for sure. Hey, the last one I wanted to go over with you really piqued my interest: digital transformation. And you kind of use the term delusion in there as well. So what's going on with digital transformation? Because we've been talking about this for like the last 5 years, it seems like. So what's going on here in this report?
Well, yeah, we have been talking about this for 5 years.
At least.
And in the lifespan or the life cycle of, management big ideas, 5 years is probably about the length of things. If we kind of go back, and I'm betting that not a lot of your viewers and listeners here are as old as I am, but I go back to the days when re-engineering was the big idea in management consulting, and that lasted a few years before it went away. And then you had to have a knowledge management program, because you had to suck the knowledge out of everybody before they got hit by a bus. That was always the story, well, what if our employees get hit by a bus? How are we going to like save all the knowledge that they
get
have?
Knowledge
so,
out.
So all of these management ideas have a life cycle. And I think we're kind of at the end of the digital transformation life cycle. And I say that because, first of all, based on the data, I think we're at somewhere around 9 out of 10 credit unions either have a digital transformation strategy or program in place, or will have one in place by the end of this year. Second, as I kind of look at what that is, first, they're all over the map in terms of how they even define digital transformation. What drives me absolutely nuts, and listen, I've got friends that I'm insulting here when I say this, but I got people that write things in like the publications that say digital transformation is about culture, not technology. That's utter nonsense, Mike. I mean, that's just completely ridiculous. Digital transformation is about deploying digital technologies. And yet, when you look at what credit unions' plans are, there's a pretty good chunk of credit unions that say that they're not going to replace their core in their digital transformation strategy. So you're not really transforming, you're just kind of building on top of things.
Yeah.
And when I look at the results, the impact that their digital transformation programs have had to date, I set the bar pretty low. I mean, I said, I defined significant improvement at, 5% or more. Mm-hmm. And there's still, a minority of credit unions saying that, they're seeing, loan volume at that level, deposit volume at that level, revenue, cost impact. So, it kind of goes back to this idea that you got to strip away the labels and the management buzzword kind of stuff, mm-hmm. and really kind of focus in on what's really going to make a difference for this organization, whether it's new product development, improving something else, focusing on this particular set of members or growing it. This notion of continuing to play this game of we're doing digital transformation, I don't even think the employee base latches on to that much anymore.
Well, it seems like a given now, or an expectation. It's something that's just naturally there now. So, and if you're not doing something like that right now, you're really behind the eight ball. So especially what we've been through the last couple of years. So, oh my gosh. So good stuff here. Hey, I know you got lots on your plate, Ron, so I don't want to keep you too long here. So what's the big takeaway that you wanted folks to gain from this year's report? What did you want readers to gain from this information?
Yeah, here's what I would say, Mike, is I think we've spent as an industry the past 20 years focusing on and believing that improving the member experience was the end all be all. And I think we've hit a point where, listen, I'm not downplaying the importance of the member experience, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
But I think we need to start balancing that with more product innovation. And it's not just simply about making things more convenient for the member. Mm-hmm. It's about providing products and services that are meeting unmet needs or meeting needs that they might not even know they had.
Right.
And that's what product innovation is all about. And so, you know, what my hope is that the takeaway is that, you know, the focus needs to be on revenue generation, product design and development. And these are areas that I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned Filene. I worked with Filene a number of years ago to do a study looking at product development and found that, you know, very few credit unions have a product design and development capability and competency. And I think that's something a lot of credit unions will need to address over the next couple of years, because I think the focus has to be on balancing the focus of product development with improving the experience. Here's my point to that. And you know, I was talking with Navy, some folks at Navy Federal Credit Union a couple months ago who arguably have a great member experience. And my point to them was, okay, let's say we could grade your member experience. And let's say you're at a 93 or 94 out of 100. How much more business and profits are you going to generate by going from 93 to 97? Not a lot. The reality is it's not going to have that kind of impact. And so you've got to be focusing on something else. And I think that something else is product design, product development, new products and services. Now, clearly, if your score on a customer experience rating is at 50, you got a lot of work to do. And yes, you might get a lot of business going from 50 to 90. But I think for a lot of credit unions who have been focusing on the member experience for 15, 20 years now, I think they have to start allocating more funds to product design and development versus continuing to improve the existing member experience related to existing products and services. You know, there's only so much you can gain by redesigning your mobile app in terms of your user interface stuff. So that's my hope of what the takeaway is.
Okay. And isn't that, because as you're talking, I'm thinking about what the challenger banks are doing as well. And isn't that what they're focusing on as well? Is this innovation really kind of, I don't want to say upsetting the market, but really kind of, you know, sending, you know, ripples and waves throughout the market, like, hey, we're doing something a little bit different here. Is that kind of what they're doing? And then, oh my gosh. And it just, you know, it freaks the people out who are doing the traditional financial services. So is that kind of what you're seeing as well?
Absolutely. And I think it's characteristic of the fintechs who've been successful. And I say that because, you know, we've seen, Revolut and Monzo, come into the N26 has now departed. And I don't think they've been particularly successful in the U.S. because they mischaracterized the problem or the challenge. They came into the market, and I spoke to a lot of them when they came into the U.S., and I would typically ask, so, you know, what's the great problem we have here that you're going to fix coming into the market? And they say, well, you know, there's a terrible mobile banking experience. Look, I don't doubt that there's a lot of credit unions with a bad mobile banking experience, but when you look at the market in general, that's just not true. The large banks have features up the wazoo, and they've got pretty damn good mobile banking experiences. The problem was that the products and services themselves were not meeting the need. So when you look at a lot of these emerging fintechs that have done well, I mean, even Chime, who's huge, still focused in on a particular set of the market, the low to middle income consumers who wanted access to their paychecks faster, who needed better overdraft programs like the SpotMe, who needed a credit builder. And that's what Chime has done.
Yeah.
Now, then you look at a fintech like Aspiration that focuses in on consumers who care about the environment. They've created products or services that deal specifically with the needs and wants of that community.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've actually tried to rename these fintechs. They're not neobanks, they're not challenger banks, because they're not banks. They don't have a license, they can't be called banks. And I'm calling them community fintechs because they focus on particular communities of interest, not geographic communities, but affinity groups.
Okay.
And so you look at cheese focusing on the Asian market, or First Boulevard, which actually changed its name, and I should know it, but they focus on the African-American market. Mm-hmm. And not just the demographic, but focusing on the unique needs of that market. And right. I think, here's where a lot of credit unions have an advantage. I go back to Los Angeles Police Federal Credit Union. They understand the law enforcement market. And Ed and his team, they're going to have to owe me for all this mentioning of them, too. You know, everybody I mentioned owes me for this, Mike. I'm not getting paid by any of them, and I'm giving them all this free publicity. But no, all joking aside, you know, they got a certain member set. And for a lot of credit unions, I actually think that, you know, the direction we've seen over the past 20 years of going to a community charter is going to get rethought by a lot of credit unions mm-hmm. who realize that it's, community isn't about necessarily about geography anymore.
Yep.
It's about community of interest and affinity. And I think we're going to see some, rechartering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that's a big move in 2022 as well, even going into 2023. So yeah, a lot of that going on. Oh my gosh, Ron, I could talk about this for hours with you, but I know you got a job to do. And I'd love to get this this information out there. We'll put the link to the report in the show notes so people can get right to it as well. Because again, we just scratched the surface here. There's so much information in here. Really, really good stuff. Anything else to add to wrap up, Ron? Any final thoughts? Any final words of wisdom?
Revenue, products, new products, death to customer experience.
You said it. All right, Ron, I'll let you get going. Appreciate the time as always. Well done. And I look forward to the next chat.
Thanks, Mike.
Good chat. You're welcome. This episode brought to you by Origins, technology for today's lenders.